Now, welcome back to the Chicago story, and in particular, welcome back to probing what lay behind the success of Al Capone. So, Jeremy, can you just tell me a little bit about how Al Capone actually made his money?
Well, that is... So I think what makes Al Capone really unique to some of the other mafia factions or organized crime units in the U.S. history is a couple of things. One was the velocity in which he was able to make his money so quickly, and was able to do it at such a young age, is unlike many other people.
So he was able to scale up his business?
Rapidly.
So a lot of startups today would be interested in how to scale up their business, right?
I think there would be potentially some overlaps there, sure. And I think that his greatest strength was his ability to blur ethnic lines amongst the Irish and Jewish and the black community and so forth. And, of course, infiltrating the poorer communities into his business, not just as marginalized groups that he served, but he would hire them and pay them very high wages, and so that therefore he knew that he was going to be well liked regardless of what part of the city he was in.
There are a number of corporations I know in the world today who actually deliberately pay high wages in order to retain valuable staff. They may well have been influenced by Capone's leadership score.
I think today we would define that as human capital development, right? Is retaining the best talent and still trying to attract the best and the cheapest, if you possibly can.
Can you go into the money mechanism? I mean, just in terms of the cash flow and how did he scale up and what did he scale up from?
Most of his money was made during the Prohibition era, where he would strike
1929 to
onward, right? To onward, 33. Right. Yeah. Right. So that's a very short period of time to make millions and millions of dollars. He had several connections in Canada, where whiskey would be distilled and then driven and or trained down into Chicago and through New York. So Capone was the point, the contact point and essentially the puppeteer of the mobility of liquor throughout New York City, Atlantic City, New Jersey, Duluth, Minnesota, where all of the Great Lake boats and the steel workers would work, and also in Chicago and down into St. Louis in the south as well. So he covered a tremendous amount of territory. Some people said he was responsible for almost one-third of the United States liquor consumption. And through
he was serving active demand.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
I think prohibition was never a citizen-demanded policy by any means.
Why was prohibition brought in, by the way? I just realized I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Is that a hard question?
That might be a different episode.
Okay.
We can open up the textbooks for that one.
Yeah.
But it definitely was not voted upon. This was not a democratic decision by any means. This was...
And it wasn't a Republican decision either.
Absolutely not. This was something that was crafted by both the FBI and... high-level politicians to dampen and suppress units like Capone and so forth and so forth. But of course, during that time in the United States, religion started to play a very, very big part in defining morality in the United States, and liquor consumption and promiscuity and so forth and so forth was immediately suppressed in many ways.
So would Father Matthew have been in some way, he's the great campaign for temperance in Ireland, and his statue lies in the middle of Patrick Street in Cork, and my own father would have been a total abstinence pioneer, as I would have been for a brief period as a child. Mm. So Al Capone would have been, those people would have been the people, you know, against whom?
Sure, I think the fairest comparison that I can make, and again, removing all the criminality and the murder and the brutality of the things that is tied to Capone, I think he was definitely a free market entrepreneur in the way that we would define it today. That said, so long as there's demand, there always will need to be someone who can provide the product. And I want to be that person. And I think that he is profoundly well known for removing morality of, you know, defining what is right and wrong and fair and unfair from business.
So people like Hayek, let's take as an economist, might well have taken a lead from Al Capone?
I think fair market economists or behavioral economists, you know, Milton Friedman and the like, who are alum of the institution that I work at.
Right.
Would agree perhaps with his business philosophy in terms of letting the market sort of define what is fair and unfair. But I always think that there's a threshold at some point. Corporations can overreach, and corporations can over time dictate the behavior of society. And I think that's where inequality, I think.
But back to Capone now. I'd like to know who influenced Capone to give him this opportunistic expertise.
Sure. You know? So there are a handful of people that influenced him. And of course, all the Italian names are skipping my head at the moment. But
there would have been Italian
absolutely.
Thinkers.
He was first hired as a muscle man for the Italian mafia in New York City in Brooklyn. He grew up in Brooklyn in the very early 20s, and what was also called a Brooklyn rat. Brooklyn rats were these kids who would play stickball in the streets and would rob fruit markets and would rob old ladies and so forth and so forth, and he was one of the best.
So Robin Hood might have had an influence on...
Perhaps. I think most of it was machoism and those sorts of things at that time was... He was
Did he
raised...
steal from the rich to feed the poor or steal from the poor to feed the poor?
I think he... That's a great question. Did he steal from the rich and give to the poor? I don't think that was ever his intention, was to steal from the rich. I think his goal was to make money wherever he could make it, whether it was from the poor or the rich.
Right, he was a pure entrepreneur then.
I think so.
Right, okay. So he learned his trade, his craft...
Quite well.
I'm just wondering if he would have studied Pareto or any of the Italian economists.
Well, he was not an educated man. I might be incorrect, but I do recall him dropping out of school at a very young age and working on the streets with a small gang of kids. And they started their own gang, and they became quite well known in a area of Brooklyn. For robbing people and those sorts of things. The Italian mafia heard of this group of kids, Brooklyn rats, so to speak, and wanted to retain and hire them to do some muscle work. So, for example, let's say there was a dry cleaners that the Italian mafia controlled, and every month they had to pay their dues. If they did not pay their dues, they would send Capone's Brooklyn rats or group to go muscle them in for the money. He became very, very skilled at doing that without brutality. He was able to do it with intimidation.
Oh, there's the fire department passing us. Interruption now for emergency medical services passing by.
So he was quite skilled at intimidation, and I think that that's...
By the way, there's a graveyard, I have to tell you, on the left-hand side.
This is the oldest cemetery in Chicago. It is well over 100 years old.
And would any of Capone's work be able to be found in that graveyard?
I would be very surprised if we could not walk through and find people that were well-known that worked for him. There are some very well-known folks in there, authors and the like, and politicians and things like that. So we're now entering, as we're driving east here on Lawrence Avenue, we're now entering the part of the city called Uptown, and we're experiencing some traffic, so more than likely there's some construction or a festival of some sort. But Uptown, we can sort of see in the distance the Aragon Theater sign. It's one of the oldest theaters in Chicago. It's a massive amphitheater that many, many famous films and movies and bands and performances alike from all around the world have come to perform here. And of
did
course,
the Beatles ever come to Chicago and perform there?
They did not perform at the Aragon Theater.
Did the Rolling Stones
Stones have come to Chicago many times. I honestly don't know the roster of bands that have played at the Aragon, but I do know it's incredibly famous.
Can I go back to Al Capone then just for a minute? Because I'm quite intrigued to know about how he learned his ability to delegate. He clearly was... You can't scale up a business unless you're able to appoint people to take the brand into new areas.
So I think the book does a tremendous job of articulating his growth, both as just a man, but also as a businessman. When he was young, he could get everything that he needed, including money and power and influence, by mere intimidation. But as his business started to grow, intimidation and the reach of your intimidation shortened. as it expands. And when your business expands, you're also absorbing other people who have power and influence. And so therefore, you can't really muscle people into agreeing with you much anymore. And so he had to identify new tactics of running his business, just like any other business would today. Once they continue to grow, they have to redefine their outreach models and all those sorts of things. And he started to do that. And I think his key strategy was to obviously hide himself more and find a close-knit of people he can trust, which would what we would call an advisory board or exec board and those sorts of things, people that we can delegate important projects to and have full trust in them. He was an incredibly, incredibly paranoid man, as most crime bosses are.
A lot of chief executives, I have to say, would also be paranoid as well.
That's pretty
seems
true.
To be perhaps one of
I think the pressure
qualities
of failing is
absolutely
too much.
Fear of failure could be quite strong, right? So he took himself away from the front of the brand,
absolutely,
and he allowed others to come through.
I think so, and then he, over time, started to launder his money because he knew that the FBI was quite close to catching him and putting him away for a long time. And he grew considerably more paranoid. He became what people would probably call a hermit in many ways, locking himself in and buying apartments and houses around the Chicago area and hiding for weeks on end. And
did they call them safe houses? Because there's a great tradition in Ireland of having safe houses. It goes back to, it goes way back over the centuries.
Sure,
safe
I think, I don't know if it was referred to as a safe house, but I think the context would have been the same, or the intention of these homes would have been the same, would be to disappear and provide a false address and all those sorts of things that nobody would know where he was. So we are coming up here now on the back end of the Uptown Theater. This is the back of the Uptown Theater.
Oh, yeah, I can see the building,
and it's
yeah.
incredibly famous. It's massive. It is abandoned as we speak.
There's a design on the side of it, which looks quite interesting. There's a whole lot of crisscrossing squares with... Mm-hmm. Some symbol in the center of the squares.
And you'll see an unorganized display kind of fire escapes on the back of the building here.
That looks like a bit of conceptual art. I mean, that is absolutely a wonderful piece of sculpture.
So the very top right one is the VIP balcony, and this was only a fire escape for people that were the wealthiest of the wealthy, and they would be allowed to exit the building should there be a fire first. And then everyone else at the bottom would have to pile up at the back there. But it's quite... It's a beautiful building. I can't wait until they reopen it. But here on the left, we're coming up on the Green Mill. And this is the Uptown Theater, and the Green Mill is on the front end, which is the east side of the building. There are tunnels that run underground that connect the two. And unfortunately, if we go into the Green Mill, if you ask them... Can you show us those tunnels? The first response will be no.
Does that mean because, you know, you haven't greased my palm with silver?
I'm not sure. I've always heard that they will never show you the tunnels here. And I, for some reason, I believe it's... I don't think it's the restaurants or the bars policy. It's more than likely something to do with either the courts or the police or something like that.
It could also be a form of elaborate form of scarcity marketing. In other words, somebody has decided... that the longer we prevent somebody from being able to see it, the more we can charge
as
demand, pent-up demand, builds
sure.
up.
It's more mysterious.
If you were taking a long-term view, you might decide, like Apple, for example, will release a new iPhone, and at the beginning, there will be a tiny trickle of supply.
Sure. Six months of... tidbits of how it will look and function and all that. You add some mystery to the brand and then people clamor for it when it comes out.
So would there be a connection between Al Capone and Apple in that respect?
I don't... Well, if I were to make that connection, I would probably be the first person to do that.
There's a hugely ornate building here
yes.
on the right-hand
side.
Yes, so
this is a famous, famous bank.
Starbucks coffee is at the bottom.
On the bottom there, yeah.
But what am I looking at?
So this was a very famous old bank in the 20s at the same time. So all the buildings that you see here in the corner, this one here and across the way, that one there, are all original buildings that have been here for almost 100 years, if not longer.
When was Chicago founded? Is there a date that is generally agreed to be the beginning?
I wish I could say. The first settlement in Chicago was along the Chicago River by DeSable. And at that time, we had Native Americans that were settling in the Chicago area. And I would have to guess that it was in the late 1700s. The West had not yet been fully explored.
Excuse me interrupting you. There is an Ethiopian restaurant.
Yes.
Now, in Cork,
here's
we do
the Green
not
Mill
have...
on the left. There.
That's the Green Mill
over
there?
Yes, with the blinking lights and all of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And opposite it, an Ethiopian restaurant. Wow. What diversity.
You can see the facade here of the Uptown Theater.
Right. And it is, as you said, boarded up.
Yep, it is
but
dilapidated.
There is a chance that in 5 years' time that will
yes,
be restored?
Absolutely. So there, it's been a long process because it is designated historical landmark, but the city has not provided the funding to upkeep. And so they've had to scout outside venture capital to buy it and then rebuild it themselves, but the price tag is astronomical.
Would that be typical North American anyway stuff? Because, you know, that's a bit like saying it's up to private enterprise to bring these things back rather than public policy.
I think that would be mostly true. I do think good urban policy encourages investment in urban infrastructure from the private sector. Because it's much more sustainable than if the state had to provide the funding.
Do you have the concept of public-private partnerships?
Absolutely. It's what I teach. It's what I teach.
So let me tell you this. I'm looking at a train that's come across on a train track here up above us.
Right,
elevated train track. Is that a public-private partnership or what?
It is. This is technically a private partnership. The guidelines and the accreditation of how it has to function and the hiring procedures and all of that is all dictated by the city government. Advertising is completely allowed on the inside of the train cars. CTA is the Chicago Transit Authority.
And that's a registered trademark.
It's a registered trademark, absolutely.
And that is electrified?
It's electrified, yes.
And that runs 24 hours a day? I'm putting words in your mouth
24
now.
Hours a day, absolutely. Now, the frequency of the trains would fluctuate.
And it's well-used and popular and respected, or is it kind of...
Well, I would say it's well-used and popular. Well-respected would vary from person to person.
Are you being diplomatic now?
I have to be careful because I have colleagues that run the CTA.
Right,
so
right. But it's a mass transport system, right?
It is. It's one of the largest in the United States.
I used to work for London Transport, right? Mm. So I don't want to put you in any embarrassment. There's a 11-foot-6-inch clearance on the bridge, and I have actually worked for a bus company which has had buses run into
to the bottom
bridges,
of bridges,
right?
Sure.
Right, and. Now, the Aragon is the theater I see there, and I see that there is a... We can't see what's coming to the Aragon. Interestingly enough, I see a car park here on the right-hand side, which is almost entirely empty. Now,
for
is
the
that...
bank only.
Right.
Which is another interesting debate, because parking in Chicago is quite scarce, and the competition for the spaces is a very expensive debate. For example, there's tons of opportunity for parking here, but because it's owned by the bank, it's never going to be used. So they own the property, and what they'll do is they will hold the value of the land until it gets to a certain point, and they'll sell it.
Right, another example of entrepreneurship. Mm. And did Capone do any of those things? Did he hold back any of his liquor supplies until the price went up? Or did he just absolutely control the price of liquor?
I think if you were to get in, there are tons of outstanding documentaries that get into sort of the details of some of the contracts and agreements he would make with the East Coast crime units. One was actually withholding certain kinds of liquor that he knew were in high demand in New York City. And he would withhold them either for more money or for a better agreement in which he would get something in return of greater value than the value of what he was holding back from New York City.
Well, that would be quite normal business practice in just about any modern company. And a company that didn't do a calculation about, you know, the return on investment in the short run and when you should sell, when you should buy, wouldn't really be in business.
Sure.
I can't see anything on in the Aragon Theatre except, which is a little surprising.
Let's see if we can try to
Park. Right. Yeah. I won't distract you now with any more about this, but I must say that I greatly